I'm Gab. He's Jules. We have a misty morning here in West London, but Jules, we also have a packed show for everybody today because we'll be talking Liga, Barcelona and Sevilla, possibly Ferran Torres on his way back. How about that? We had Serie A. We have Inter winning again. We have Milan back to winning ways. We had the League Cup. Tons to get into. But let's start in the game between Barcelona and Sevilla. It was a draw.
It was a draw.
Big talking point for me. Let's get straight to it. Jules Koundé.
Oh, I love it.
On the FC show. On the FC show last night, Frank Leboeuf went and gave everybody a big lecture about how bad Jordi Alba was, bad Jordi for going and bumping him and then throwing himself to the ground and so on. Like, I don't know if this is some sort of French solidarity movement. Jules Koundé would have been sent off anyway, right?
For throwing the ball in the face of Alba, even if Alba stood up?
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so who cares?
I know, but like, one, in a way, I admire the reaction and go like, you know what, I've had enough of you, here you go. Two, it's, don't do it, it's not good, you should not do it. I think Koundé had a lot of regrets about it. His team could have lost the game.
He looks so upset.
He looked really upset. He's a young player. This will be part of the learning curve. He got sent off with France for something similar.
Like little boyish face as well.
Yeah, but not for something similar with France, but for like a reaction and a tackle that he should have controlled a bit better, exactly like that. And I think that's part of the learning curve for him to become a great, great player. But Jordi Alba, all the tricks in the box, all the experience, knowing exactly what to do to provoke him and, you know, and get him sent off.
You know, I think in this situation, there's a very simple solution, which, and this is, I think, one of the faults of VAR. Maybe you can make an exception in these cases. There is no reason for Jordi Alba to go over and to bump him twice. All it does is it's inflamed the situation and so on.
Yeah, really.
And I realize you can't review it. I realize maybe the referee didn't see the bump or didn't get a clear view. But he should have been booked at a minimum. He should have been booked for the two bumps. Because it's not what, you know, we can say, oh, the dark arts in football. Yeah, I know. I don't need to see that.
Definitely.
In terms of the game itself, and we're going to get, obviously, to the big Ferran Torres news. Yes. Right now, excited I am. Xavi felt that they played better. And that they deserve to win. I'm not 100% on that because, yes, credit for obviously a lot of people missing, no Memphis Depay, a lot of kids in the lineup. I bet someone might have been even more kids if there wasn't a limit.
There's that rule, isn't it? If someone gets sent off, then you lose the points or something.
It was something like you have a limit on the number of youth team registered youth team players that you can play. Because otherwise your team is considered too weak.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny given the circumstances. But there is progress. There is progress, although I kind of feel a lot of possession, and then in the end, only six shots on goal.
I know.
And is that's just youth, yeah?
I thought it was the best performance, more or less, under Xavi since he arrived. I really did. Pouring down with rain, away from home, against a team that is, as we always say, okay, they failed in the Champions League, and I don't think they're the greatest Sevilla team ever, but they're always well-organized, well-structured, know exactly what to do. You saw that on the Papu goal. It's well-worked. This is a team that is well-worked. I think it's a good way of putting it. And I thought Barca, for part of the games and big part of the game, really played well against them, played them out of the park, moved the ball really well, created some decent chances that I think with a bit more efficiency in the last 30 yards could have had more goals, more big chances, more shots on target. It was just, there was always something missing a little bit. Ferran, the other Ferran, with a couple of maybe the wrong choice made. Dembele as well. He does a lot of good things.
Second appearance. You know.
Yeah, exactly. But I found him really interesting in the previous game when he scored. And this time I thought he was good in his movement. So I thought there was a lot of optimism.
All right. Big news is plenty out there reporting, including our own Moises Llorens and Sam Marsden, that they have reached this deal for Ferran Torres.
Yeah.
We're going to get into the specifics and how a club with no money can do it. We're going to get into that more on the Gavin Jules podcast. But off the top, I just want to ask you quickly, A, is this what they need? And B, because this is slightly underreported, what's the implication for Manchester City? Because this is another body leaving, ostensibly, possibly in mid-season. Should they get excited that somebody's coming?
Yeah. I think any signing, any talented player like he clearly is a talented player. He's good for Barcelona. You're a big fan. I think it's a lot of money. And I think you put all your eggs in the same basket with a lot of money on someone who is young, of course, who is a very intelligent player and quite versatile. So it might be perfect for you. It's still a lot of money.
What about City?
Someone else is going to come in. There's no way.
In January. Oh,
for sure.
This is pretty huge because we know with City that he doesn't add players just to have an extra body. And I'm kind of surprised that people haven't fully picked up on this. I'm wondering, you know, Vlahovic, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe somebody else. I mean,
you would think so. Even if they've done really well without Ferran for this first half of the season because he's been injured pretty much all of it. So you could say that, well, without him or with him, it doesn't make much difference. But still, I would not think they would let him go. Well, usually they let one go and
you
and
would think
one.
So. Yeah. Because the squad is obviously very talented, but it's not like they've got an enormous size squad. All right, we're going to get into all that. We're going to speculate. We'll review more of the game, all of that on the Gavin Jules podcast. All right, Jules, let's take a closer look at the game itself before going off into January transfer wonderland.
Oh, we love that.
Let's remind ourselves of all the players who were missing for Barcelona. Because I think it's a good exercise to do. As we look at this, as we delve in all the negativity, obviously players who, you know, who we didn't have. Pedri, Ansu Fati, Memphis Depay. I mean, already, arguably, those are his three best players, right?
Yeah.
So I think we always need to look at that when we look at the broader picture of what they're trying to do. I had some level of skepticism when players all chuck on all the kids because of what I've seen of the kids. And, you know, people are comparing this to sort of the earlier generations. But, you know, frankly, other than Gavi and obviously Ansu Fati, I don't see anybody who, you know, I would stake my mortgage that they're going to make
Nico
it at Barcelona.
Has something, I think.
As something other than a squad player. No, I think
Nico has something interesting. I think Abde is a bit raw still, but certainly in terms of energy, in terms of maybe being able to make them into what Xavi really wants, it's better to bet on them than on someone a bit older. I don't know, but yeah, you're right. It's a big deal that you don't have Fati, Memphis, and Pedri in the team, which would make your team much better, for sure.
So, looking at this, do we still feel? Remember before we had the philosophical question: is it going to be easier to get to the Champions League by winning Europa League or getting back into the top four? Now that from what you're seeing more broadly, have you come around to my view that top four is?
I still think Europa League is a big bet, even if they play Napoli now, obviously in the sort of playoff tie, if you want, which is going to be very tricky for them. I've been really reassured by the last two, by the Elche game and the Sevilla game, I have to say. Elche, okay, they switched off, they conceded those two goals, but the reaction after the Nico goal to win it and the performance that I saw against Sevilla, I think is very, very encouraging, especially with those three key players out, especially in terms of the balance of the team, in that role for Gavi with a bit more freedom. One of the Christmas wish I have is like, please don't do a Pedri with Gavi, because
don't overplay him.
Yeah, and I think we've said it many times. I've seen it. We were not just the only one. It's very obvious for everyone. I still don't know why they overplayed him so much, both the national team and Barcelona last year, and now he's hardly not played for 6 months because of that.
I love the fact that you can make that point without referencing who the coach was who overplayed him, right?
Because it's Christmas, and you know the Dutch guy has to celebrate Christmas too.
All right. A word on Sevilla, because, you know, they're still second. They still have a game in hand. This looks to me like a very, very tired team. You know, you talked about the organization. And that's fine. They had one shot the whole game, which was Papu Gomez's goal, which incidentally, this really surprised me. Obviously, it was a set piece routine. And he said, oh, no, we looked at some videos this morning and we decided to do it. That really surprised me because I said, come on, man. Like, all right, either Papu's nose got a little bit longer when he said that, or how do you do something so sophisticated? Because it was sophisticated, right? It involves two players effectively, you know, blocking or setting a pick if you like your basketball, right? Papu's timing has to be absolutely perfect to get there. We don't believe that they just did that morning.
Definitely not. It's like, you know, like sometimes you go and Papu says in Rakitic's ear, hey, you know, I'm going to do this. They've practiced that a lot. It was clearly something that maybe not, I mean, certainly not for, just for this game, but that you try again one of the combinations that you've got on set pieces that loads of clubs have now. But the thing is, the first goal against Atletico Madrid was that Rakitic, you know, like won the strike. Right. That This is not a goal that, you know, you...
It's not something you plan.
Yeah, exactly. And this one is on set piece. It's a really worked out from the training on set piece. But again, it's a goal on set piece.
They're not creating what you're driving.
And even the second against Atleti is that corner, that rebound, the second phase of the corner that Ocampo scores. And that's where I'm worried, because in the Champions League, having seen them play a lot because they were in Lille's group, they struggled. They really struggled
to
create.
I think, look, obviously everybody's played a lot of games. And you know. But certain teams, I think, suffer from fatigue more, maybe because they've had injuries so they couldn't rotate or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, Lucas Ocampos in the last game when he nearly fainted, and he was stretchered off to the crowd.
Yeah.
And then he comes back and he plays 3 days. I mean, this is really a team.
It is.
Just going on fumes. And not everybody's affected by it. Liverpool have played a bazillion games too, but they just keep running all day. It's different levels of athleticism, different demands. I think we have to understand that.
Really.
Not fatigue doesn't affect everybody in the same way. It's not just about a question of saying, like, oh, get fit. They're all fit. All right. Let's go to the Ferran Torres thing.
Because
everybody's asking the same question, like, wait a minute. Do Barcelona have money or do they not have money? So I just kind of, at the risk of boring people, and you can fast forward to the quick hits if you get bored by this. I just want to remind some people about what this means, right? So, first of all, Barcelona they don't have an owner. Obviously, they're owned by fans, which means they don't have somebody who can just inject equity.
Money. That's true.
It's also, given how they've been run, it's also more difficult for them to borrow money, because who's going to loan Barcelona any money? Or when they do get money loaned to them, it's usually a very high interest rate.
Yes.
Because they're not seen as a good credit risk, because we're nearly insolvent.
Yeah.
So we need to bear that in mind. That's in terms of actually having access to cash that you can use to pay players. That's one side of things. And that has an impact in different ways. So, for example, the Barcelona Socios, they passed...
For the new stadium, or the refurbishment.
Yes, $1.5 billion to refurbish the Camp Nou. Well, obviously, it doesn't mean that they're putting in $1.5 million. It means they've authorized that they're going to raise debt to do that. This debt, because it's virtuous, it's not going to affect financial fair play, and it's not going to affect...
And they start paying in 5 years the interest on the...
they get whatever terms they can get, and little by little, they'll pay that off. So this is kind of unrelated to that. The main sticking point is that there is, they call it a salary cap, it's more of a budget cap in Spain, where you can only spend a certain amount on transfers, amortized transfers, wages and commissions, net of sales. You can only spend a certain amount each year. Now, Barcelona are way beyond that.
Yeah, as we saw in the summer.
We saw it in the summer. Yeah. I think their budget is like 97 million, whereas they're like five or six times that, right? However, what the rules allow you to do is, okay, you're way over budget, which means you need to cut costs, which means you need to make savings. So essentially, for every 100 euros in savings that you make, you can spend 25 euros, right? Otherwise, teams would just never get out of the
hole.
So this is purely back of the envelope calculations. I could be completely wrong on that. But the Ferran Torres fee, which we'll get to about whether it's the right fee or not, is 55 million euros, according to reports.
Yeah.
And then there's 10 million in bonuses, but that doesn't really come into it. So if you were to come in January, 55 million, because you amortize that fee over the life of the contract, you're looking at, it's probably more like a 5.5 or 4.5 year contract, most likely, but you're looking at something like, you're taking a hit of about 6 million in amortization for that. And then you need to pay for his, you need to pay for his wages. I think his wages will likely be something in the order of, 6 million
Gross, 5 million gross, maybe a little less, 4 million. Let's say 4 million for argument's sake. That's half a season. So that brings you to 7 million, okay, that you need to come up with to pay to have him, you know, for the rest of the season. That is the hit on your books. A big chunk of that will come from half a season of Sergio Agüero's wages, which obviously they're not going to pay because they had to cancel his contract. They still need to get somebody else off the book, and so if it's 7 million, or sorry, we said about 7 million. So they need to save four times that, so close to 30 million.
Yeah,
right. Of those 30 million, a chunk of that's going to be Agüero's wages for half a season, which I'm going to guess will probably be 6 or 7 million, maybe a little more because his contract was canceled in November or early December. But you still need to conjure up, like, what, 22, 23 million from somewhere?
Yeah.
If you give Coutinho away to somebody and they pick up the rest of they pay his wages for the rest of his contract, okay.
Yeah,
that's like another, that's like another 11 million.
Yeah,
but
it's tricky.
Umtiti, you can give it. So who's going to go and pay for these guys?
No, I know. I mean, right now, the only
one. Or you
have
to sell.
Yeah, the only one really, well, the only two, I think, that have this kind of value are Ter Stegen and De Jong.
Among the veterans, the good
De Jong, not the bad De Jong.
Yeah.
The bad De Jong, maybe they could, you know, somehow find...
But he's on loan.
Yeah, but...
So you could loan him back to Sevilla, maybe?
But I don't think they want... Well, what would they want?
Well, if he's on loan, you cancel the loan. Cancel might be some provision or somebody else go...
But he doesn't make a
lot of money anyway. So.
Yeah, true. But you can cancel... Umtiti's contract because
you
never played.
I don't think you can cancel it. You still have to pay him off if
you will have to pay him off. But
so
it's tricky. But you don't want to sell Ter Stegen and De Jong, the good De Jong.
No.
So it's a tricky situation. So my question for you is, you know, this huge loan that they had from Goldman Sachs or whoever it was, could that help for Ferran Torres, or is it completely two different? This is to control and manage the debt.
Yeah, this is to control and manage.
So they can't use a bit of that money to say, "Hey, what about we take 10 million?"
No. And also because, I mean, they can't raise equity, right? They can't make an equity injection, so they have to go and this is a budgetary P&L thing, right? So they have to make these savings. That's why I appreciate the deal is done. I'm frankly surprised that I don't. It's contingent on these things happening.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this is maybe something that happens in the summer, perhaps, or unless they know that somebody's coming along and giving you 20 million for Ricky Puig, and then you're like, okay, fine.
That's
another guy you figure.
Yeah.
Or Carlos Alenia is still on their books, right?
Hasn't he gone to Getafe or someone like that? Yeah, but yeah, it's tricky.
It's a very tricky situation.
Yeah. I think it's a lot of money for Ferran Torres. I think it's a lot of money. I think we both like him. You like him more than I. You think he
could potentially... How is it a lot of money for Ferran Torres? I really like to...
65 million euros for Ferran Torres.
It's 55.
Potentially 65 with the add-on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think that's too much for Ferran Torres, who City bought 2 years ago,
First of all, when City bought him...
It was a release clause.
It was a release clause, so that's not really relevant, right?
I know, true, but I think 65 is a lot of money.
You don't think Ferran Torres... I mean, I'll give you the point that he's injured. And by the way, his injury is another clue to me that maybe this deal's been agreed, but it actually, ultimately, materially, it's going to get done in the summer.
Yeah.
You don't think his value has increased in the time he was there?
No, I think he
can go to Manchester City, arguably the best team in the world. 55. What do you keep saying 65?
Because 55, and then when the add-on have been triggered, it's 65, and I said to you, well, you see, they paid 65 for him.
Yeah, but we don't know what the add-ons are. They may never get triggered.
Okay,
but
even 55. I think 55, yes.
When I look at his age, when I look at the fact that this is somebody who's got 12 goals in 22 games for Spain, his scoring record on a per minute basis with Manchester City is very good. Now you can say, oh, Manchester City
Where is he going to play?
Well, you know me. I think Ferran Torres is a center forward.
Okay, where is Memphis going to play then?
You can play Memphis behind him.
Okay.
You can go 4-2-3-1. Like, I know we like to stereotype Xavi as like
I just think 4-3-3.
Or you play him. Why don't you keep playing Memphis through the middle, which is suboptimal, but you have to play Memphis somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Memphis is really probably
so.
A 4-4-2.
But also Dembele, as we saw against Sevilla.
Enough with the Dembele. Dembele's just going to get hurt again. Dembele's made of glass.
Dembele was... But clearly, you could see that they were feeding him a lot against Sevilla because...
Well, who are they supposed to be? They've got Abdi and Juga or whatever they give you. Ferran.
Colin Ferran, the other Ferran.
Yeah.
But still, I think Ferran Torres is going to arrive with a lot of pressure. But again, I love him. And I think he's got great potential and he could do really well there. But to almost like solve this striker issue that they have, right? So whenever he comes, whether it's now or in the summer, depending on how fit he is, who will have to get into this team, deliver straight, almost straight. I just think for a young player like him, who... You know, has had good moments with City, but also injuries, also times where he was not picked, was not played, was not always played in his best position, which we're not really sure exactly what the best position is.
He's a center forward.
Yeah, well, so you believe so.
I don't know.
I think it's great, but I think it's great that they can go and sign someone for that amount of money. I'm just wondering if that's the best use of all that money. That's all.
I take your point on that, and it does seem a little bit odd to me. And it seems odd to me, like, let's turn it around from the City perspective now, because... You're taking one guy out of the team. You can say, well, he's been injured and they're flying and whatever.
Yeah,
fine. But he's still a body in the squad who has scored a lot of goals.
Yeah, but today you would not play him. If he was fit, you would not play him ahead of anyone in that team, right?
I don't know. He's been rotating the people. We've had Grealish at center forward, Sterling at center forward.
Okay, but Sterling is...
center forward. We've had all sorts of people, right? So there's no reason Ferran Torres couldn't be in that rotation with those other guys.
Yeah, I think your love for Ferran Torres here is like...
No, but you're
Ferran Torres is not better than Grealish right now in this team. Sterling, well, Foden,
yeah, but
even Mahrez, right?
But what have we seen from Pep? He's been rotating and alternating his players, right?
Yeah.
So over a long season where you're competing on multiple fronts, presumably he wants to keep doing that. I'm not saying Ferran Torres is better than those guys.
No. But
taken as an individual, I mean... But frankly, though, taken as an individual on this team, right, other than of the attacking players, so excluding the defenders, other than Kevin De Bruyne, maybe Foden, everybody else, I'm not saying they're all on the same level, but there's a large degree of interchangeability. Right?
Yeah.
And even Kevin De Bruyne, as we know, he can go missing for 6 months, can get injured, and the team just keeps playing.
It's true.
So what I'm into now is, and we're purely speculating, I think it's one of two things. Either City know that there's no way Barcelona are going to get this done in January.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to lose him in January, I think City have to bring somebody else
in. I agree.
In January.
And I think this is the plan. And I think this is a plan in the summer already when they wanted Kane and they were putting all those... So fillers out, okay, Bernardo is for sale. Ferran Torres is for sale. You know, trying to recoup some of the money to then make the Harry Kane deal possible or very likely, whatever. This doesn't mean that they will go back for Harry Kane, although our colleague Rob Dawson wrote it a few weeks ago that they were going to try. So let's wait and see.
Well, I think you said in the summer, right? Or did he say January?
I thought he said in January, but I might be wrong. But certainly I think the plan is, okay, if one goes, we still need someone else there, you know, a body. Mahrez is going to go to the African Cup of Nations, for example. So let's say Torres leaves now. That means you lose two players in January. Mm. So for me, it's guaranteed that if he actually goes in January, they will go and try to get someone else, whether that's Vlahovic, Kane, Haaland, whoever you want to go for.
Okay, well, let's assume it's not going to be Haaland in January. We know that, right? So it's an interesting choice. If you go for Kane, I'm thinking, you know my thoughts on Kane and how much he would cost.
Yeah, at his age, yeah.
But is there a scenario where they get Kane and then Spurs replace Kane with Vlahovic? Do they go straight for Vlahovic? Are there other people that they could... Because we're talking mid-season, right?
Yeah,
you can bring up the usual strikers. You bring up Isak, you bring up Adeyemi. But these guys aren't going to move in January. Vlahovic is a guy who could move in January.
Yeah,
for very obvious reasons, because of his contractual situation's broken down.
Definitely.
Is there somebody else that springs to mind? Because Arsenal have got the same issue with strikers.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll go for your pal, Ollie Watkins.
Yeah, maybe. Or they can sign Aubameyang, City. And then, you know, it's like he's there. He's on the market. It's perfect.
Yeah.
No, but it would be... I would think that Chiqui Begiristain and Pep already... And Pep's brother and all the people involved in all those deals... Pere. Already have a short list in place. This is something that they would have planned before. You know, that Ferran Torres... could potentially go, and they've got a list of names able to capable of replacing him. Doesn't have to be a superstar.
Well, this is the interesting thing, right, to me, is if you're going to replace him, what makes most sense to me is you either bring in a superstar if you can.
Yeah.
And I always thought in the summer, you know my thoughts on this whole recognized striker nonsense. No. He wants a great footballer to play center
completely.
Forward, right? Now, and Kane fit that bill.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be shopping in that department, in other words, spending an enormous amount for a guy in his late 20s, you get somebody, maybe still spend a lot of money, but you get somebody with an upside who has resale value, right?
Yeah.
Dusan Vlahovic kind of ticks both of those boxes.
I think so.
And maybe somebody who you bring in, who's different, who you can...
Different profile,
Maybe doesn't need to start right away. I don't know. Watch this space. But to me, you're going to see a lot of speculation about this if Ferran Torres does go, because they definitely need another body. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough, Barca. How about some quick hits instead?
Well, hold on, Gab. Hold on. Keep rolling.
What? What is this?
Because look at Santos come early.
Oh, wow.
Incredible.
Look at this.
So this is a G for you.
Oh, fantastic. Look at this.
Would you recognize all the London, how do you call it?
Yes, I see the London Eye, I see Tower Bridge, the shard. We've looked here.
Yeah.
See the weird phallic. There's no shard, but still.
There's no shard, yeah. This is pretty old.
Are we meant to be opening these now,
Santa? Jules? I think so.
All right.
Let's see. It's a present from... Oh, that's nice. What could it be?
Oh.
Oh, Santa.
Stylish.
Oh,
sweater.
Here we go. Look at that beauty.
Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Oh, look, it's our slogan. Oh, my goodness.
All our catchphrases. Did you say catchphrases?
Yes. Love the game. Love your neighbor. Love yourself. There it is, boys.
Let's go, Gab.
And oh, my God. Wait, but mine doesn't have it on the back.
Mine doesn't have it on the back.
It's only the front job. Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. Thank you, Santa.
Santa is amazing.
Awesome.
So thoughtful.
Awesome. Shall we get on to quick hits? Thank you, Santa.
Let's go, guys.
We know, Santa, you're a fan.
Yeah.
Real Madrid bounced back from the draw against Cadiz at the weekend to beat Athletic Bilbao 2-1 in San Mamés. Jules, we saw a ridiculous goal from who, and given that it's Christmas, you know, we even asked you to tone it down with it, but you are allowed to do it in this circumstance.
Kareem the Dream, not once, but twice, and one especially.
Yeah, the one is ridiculous.
Special. It's very special.
The ball comes at him so hard,
It's a laser pass from Toni Kroos, and then in fairness to Athletic Bilbao, Sunset scored a lovely goal as well to make it 2-1. Even with our 11 players missing, loads of them through COVID, no Carvajal, no Modric, no Alaba, it was still, again, it's Real back to controlling those games once they take the lead. They were really good. Courtois had to come a big, though, as they always do, and Vinicius was quiet. But listen, Kareem the Dream and Courtois made the dream team.
I saw a lot of good stuff from Camavinga, too.
Yeah, in that holding role, position, which is a bit, and you know, it's unusual for him. Inter make his 7 wins in a row now in Serie A, Gab, beating Torino 1-0. They're flying. Anyone stopping them, and the gap, you know, increases.
Well, Milan won,
right,
obviously.
Milan won, but certainly over Napoli over the last few weeks.
Look, what really has impressed me about this, other than the way they play, is that normally this time of year, teams like this in the Champions League, there's a drop. You get tired, it gets cold.
Yeah.
And this hasn't happened to them. So yes, I think it was pretty huge from Inzaghi to get them to this position. Now rest, recoup, and push on.
Yeah.
Wild stuff at Anfield in the League Cup, Jules. Klopp makes 10 changes. I never thought I'd say this. Somebody named Tyler Morton is the only holdover from the game at the weekend.
Yeah.
And comes back from 3-1 down against Leicester to win on penalties after a buzzer-beating equaliser from Takumi Minamino. I know it's a League Cup. I know it's a car crash. Yeah. I know it's a bunch of dudes in Liverpool shirts, not necessarily Liverpool, or not necessarily Leicester either, though they have a strong team. But it's fun.
It was fun. It was a really good game
to
watch. Leicester played really well. Jamie Vardy with 2 goals.
Madison's goal, well. My goodness.
And Madison, to be fair, really going back to his the level that you would expect
great
him to play.
Great pass as
every
well
week.
For one of
great
the goals.
Great pass, really good. And then Minamino right at the end, who scores the goal to send the game to penalties, no extra time, of course, straight to penalties. Then he misses his penalty, so from hero to zero almost. And our friend Quavin Kelleher in goal, being amazing. So well done to Klopp, who tried all he could to lose that game, and yet he's still in. I'm kidding. Meanwhile, Spurs also advanced to the semi-final, beating West Ham 2-1. And how did Eric Dier do now that Antonio Conte is trying to make us believe that he's the best in the world?
Not so good. He was responsible.
Bowen turned him round completely.
Yeah.
Turn him over? Turn
him inside out. Inside and then out, before that, he also gave the ball away, which led to the Bowen chance, or the Bowen goal, I should say. I thought this was an open game. I thought in the second half, though, in the first half, and then in the second half, I thought Spurs controlled it well.
Yeah.
I don't know what Conte's doing with Dier. I did mind games or whatever. But look, Conte knows more about football than I do, so... Yeah. If he thinks Dier can be the best in the world or one of the best in the world, then more power to him.
Yeah, why not?
Speaking of the League Cup, both Klopp and Conte have called for the semi-finals to be reduced to one game. Good idea, Jules?
But I thought it was one leg. And then I watched the draw and everything. And they say, first leg on
January
the 3rd on something. 5th. And second leg January the 10th. So just 1 week to go from... Come on, just drop one. I'm sure the Carabao people, whoever they are, won't mind.
Ridiculous.
Meanwhile, Juventus have found a way to sneak back into fifth place. Gab, after beating Cagliari 2-0, any sign of progress? I mean, this is the kind of game they should win anyway, right?
It was a sign of game, a type of game they should have won. What was good about this is, remember before I told you they took the lead, I think it was against Venezia.
Yeah, Venezia.
And then they don't manage the lead, in other words, defend well. And then Allegri go, whoa, we couldn't defend the league. I mean, no. You score one goal, and you go, you score more goals.
Exactly.
That's what you got to try to do.
Exactly.
They tried. Yeah. Bernardeschi looked really good.
Yeah.
Moise Kean with the opening goal, he looked really good. They didn't create a ton, but they tried. They kept attacking Cagliari when there was 1-0 down. This is what Juve, I think, have to do if they don't want to be stuck 10, 15 years ago. All right, how about some more festive quick hits? What's more festive than Maurizio Icardi?
Oh.
He got a late equalizer for Paris Saint-Germain away to Lorient. Jules, not great finishing in this game. I guess because there was no Neymar, no Mbappe, right?
No Neymar, no Mbappe. Mbappe was suspended. I don't even know where to start. Messi was good, and he hit the post again, the sixth time of the season. But collectively, PSG were not good again, Gab.
Finish.
And Pochettino after the game under Herrera saying but you know Lorient, it's really tough to play here. They lost 8 in a row before hosting PSG, and PSG could hardly draw that game. I mean, I'm lost for words. I don't know. Let's have a break and then we see. And Gab, we also saw Sergio Ramos.
I thought you wanted a break.
Yeah, I wanted a break. But I've got to ask you this question. Come on as a sub, halftime, getting 2 yellows in the space of 4 minutes between 81st and 85th minute, and get the 27th red card of his career.
Yeah, and you know what? That second yellow where
so Sergio Ramos.
He's on the break. It's so Sergio Ramos. He's like, I'll just stick my butt into the defender and then fall over.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe there's a time you got away with that because you were playing for Real Madrid, but you're not there anymore. And it's just so stupid, so counterproductive. As much as you love so much about him, 27 red cards.
It's crazy.
I think there's only one player in history who's got more than he does. And if he keeps playing, if people are foolish enough to keep giving him money, he'll break the record one day.
I know.
Chelsea played 2 18-year-olds and a 17-year-old, half-tie 17-year-old, incidentally, and beat Brentford 2-0. Jules, I kind of feel a bit bad for Brentford and also maybe a bit bad for Tuchel, since you were saying he wanted to get knocked out.
Well, I don't know. I think he tried everything to get knocked out. I think he wanted to make a point.
Is that why he left Saul on the pitch? Sorry, Saul.
I mean, if Saul played, things must have been really bad in terms of team selection for Thomas Tuchel. But too many games, too many players out, COVID, injuries, everything you want. It's only when he brought the big boys on, a bit like Klopp for Liverpool, that...
Let Brentford have it.
Yeah.
It's a big deal for Brentford.
I know. I mean, they didn't do enough either to win it when he was not the big boys on. So, you know, we'll see. Stefano Pioli moves Franck Kessier into the hall and he scores two goals in Milan, 4-2 win against Empoli away. Gab, the second. Kessier is out of contract in the summer. How important it is to keep him, and can they really keep him, or is it too late?
Now that you discovered that he can play in the hole as
well. I know. I think he can play anywhere.
Look, they've been working on this negotiation for a long time, and it's the kind of thing where Kessie's agents keep, you know, says, oh, did we say $6 million? No, it's $7 million now. Oh, wait, $7.5 million, $8 million. At some point, what's gotten me into their situation is they've been disciplined about it. Look at Donnarumma.
Yeah, Çalhanoğlu as well.
They'll have to, and Çalhanoğlu as well, yeah. So they'll have to be disciplined. He's phenomenal. He has so much energy, such a physical presence. He's got quality as well. He scores goals. He takes penalties. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal player. Yeah. Whoever, if he doesn't stay, whoever gets him is getting a tremendous, one of the best midfielders around, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
It's now four league defeats in a row for Atletico Madrid as they lose 2-1 away to Granada after João Félix gave them the lead. They couldn't hang on. Jules, they've slipped to fifth now.
It's crazy. I mean, we've said many times, Gab, it feels like the end of the cycle, the Simone cycle, but nothing's going to change. They're not going to sack him. But he needs to find a solution. You know, I often say that the top managers always find a way of getting out of a crisis. And the not-so-good struggle. And let's see what Simeone does, if he still has it, because the only way he can get this team out of the... they lost to Sevilla and to Real Madrid, but Granada and Mallorca, the fourth game, the first one that they lost in that really bad run, I mean, come on, they didn't play well. That second goal that Jorge Molina scores, this is not a goal that Atleti usually concede, like the one against Sevilla, the Ocampos one. This is, they've lost their mojo defensively and offensively. There's nothing in the game. João Félix's goal is all on his own. He's literally all on his own.
You know, there's a school of thought that says that the rod actually set in last year. It's just that Oblak, you know, was Superman last year, whereas now he's still a superhero, but not one of the really good superheroes. Maybe he's Hawkeye now or something. Yeah.
And how about we show some more love to Jorge Molina, Gab? I mean, he's just shy of 40 years old, scored again, oldest player to score a hat-trick for La Liga last weekend, and now he got the equalizer. It's incredible.
It's a wonderful story. I think it shows also, if you've got, you know, he's a big boy, he keeps himself fit, and if you have that, you know, there'll be a market for you. If you're intelligent, if you've got size, that's not something you're going to lose. Look, it works for Zlatan.
Zlatan,
we're not comparing Jorge Molina to you,
he's got the same diet as Victor Montigliani. Like, similar, doesn't eat for 16 hours, you know,
you
very
go.
Structured.
The Montigliani diet.
Yeah, exactly.
Borussia Dortmund CEO Hans-Joachim Watzke says that Erling Haaland is more suited to La Liga than the Premier League and that they're working on a new deal that would increase his release clause and double his wages. Is Herr Watzke wasting his time?
I think so, completely. I mean, if you saw Erling Haaland's face after they lost that game, at the weekend and how frustrated he was. How can you keep him when you're not even sure to finish, to win anything?
Well, he says they're going to bring in better players around him. And
come on. And can you tell me why he's more suited to La Liga than the Premier League?
Yeah, I don't understand that either. It seems to me he's suited to anything.
Yeah, I know. Like, I don't know. But good luck to them. I think they should try, of course, to keep him. If you're Erling Haaland, you say, like, you know what, thank you. You really helped my progression. But it's time to move on now.
The numbers they're throwing out there, even like to double his wages, right? So he'd be going to 60 million euros gross a year, which back of the envelopes comes out to, if you think, like to think in pounds per week, it's like 250 grand a week. He's worth a lot more than
exactly.
that. Exactly.
And a lot of clubs in Europe would give him more than that.
And there would be just no reason for Mino Raiola to say goodbye to the release clause either.
I know, none exactly.
Whatsoever.
It makes no sense. Meanwhile, the isolation protocol in the United Kingdom for those who test positive has been cut from 10 to 7 days. Gab, last week there were 90 positive. This is going to have an impact, right?
Yeah, it means a lot of players who would have missed the end of the festive period when everybody stops playing, but in England they just start playing more.
Yeah,
a lot of these guys can come back. I think it's good if they can do it safely. Why not?
Yeah, as long as
you know, you got to trust in the science here.
Yeah.
Arsenal beat up Sunderland 5-1, and they're also in the League Cup semi-final where they'll play Liverpool. Jules, would you rather talk about how Eddie Nketiah's hat trick might change his chance future at the club?
Maybe.
Or do you want to tell me who Charlie Pitino is?
I'll tell you both, Gav. I'll tell you that it was a really good game from Nketiah, of course, the hat trick, the second goal, the nutmeg from Pepe on Hume, and then the sort of, first the pass from Odegaard, the nutmeg, and then the backheel finish from Nketiah was brilliant. I was at the game and the crowd just went when the nutmeg happened. He's out of contract in the summer. I don't think they will sell him before. I think they will keep him until the end of the season, and then he's going to go on a free. I think it's a shame because he's one of the boys at the club, and he's a really good kid.
How is he one of the boys at the club? He's a Chelsea guy.
I know, but he still arrived young enough to be one of theirs. And
like Cesc was, right?
Well, you know. But I think it's a shame. But for Patino, he's the future. 18, scored a goal on his debut. Really good left foot. Was huge talent as a kid. A lot of clubs fought over him. And Arsenal got him. And well done. Let's see how much he's going to play this season for.
There's video of him playing, I think, for the under-23s, maybe against Manchester United, he goes
amazing.
He scores against Phil Jones and Dean Henderson.
I think he's got something special, but let's see. You know, it's very, very...
Way to not overhype somebody.
Yeah. Napoli lose at home to Spezia 1-0. Gab, loads of players unavailable. We said that after they beat Milan, but still, this was a disappointing game for them and the one you can expect them to win.
You know, it's three straight defeats at home for Napoli.
And then they go and beat Milan away.
Yeah, and they play really well.
Yeah.
I think they're running on fumes, but I think very simply, you can't go and spot the opposition. Your best defender, Khalidou Koulibaly, your best midfielder, Fabian Ruiz, and Victor Osimhen.
And Insigne as well.
And Insigne, of course, tested positive for COVID. You know, you can't do that. It's a big ask. And the other thing about Spezia is Spezia teams just attack all the time. Right? They don't care. Home, away, whatever. You know, Thiago Motta is trying to do the right thing. And it's very difficult to play against him in those circumstances.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
FIFA held their global summit on Monday, and President Gianni Infantino said that while he probably has enough support to approve a biennial World Cup, he wants to wait and have more consultations before calling for a vote. So this looks increasingly like it won't happen.
It does, Gab. I mean, I think it's quite wise from Gianni to wait a bit and not force it. We feel at some point, remember, we talked about it, that they were probably going to try and force it. There's also this UEFA, CONMEBOL, sort of like...
It's not a good time to go to
war. Romance and everything. Yeah. So yeah, let's wait. It's probably better.
There's an excellent column on this written by me.
Yeah, I think I read it.
On the website, exactly. Which addresses all your questions and concerns. The one thing, though, I may rant about this again. Right? Sorry, I gotta
go for it. I know what's
going on. Do not be one of those Muppets who says, it's just about the money, just about the money. It's not just about the money.
No, but money comes in, though, right?
Money comes into
part of it.
Because he represents 211 countries, and the majority of these countries wouldn't have an FA without money from FIFA, and his job literally is to develop the game.
Yeah, still make a lot of money off the World Cup.
Of course, but it's not like he goes and sits on a pile of cash.
No,
he goes and he gives it out. What it is, it's about control, right?
Yeah.
It's about, do UEFA get to redistribute the money to the clubs? Because UEFA don't, it's not like they keep the money either. They give it all away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or do FIFA get to go and give it out to the FAs? That's what you got to go and work out.
Definitely. Sticking with FIFA, they also decided to split their commercial activity into three parts, men's, women's, and esports. Is that a good idea? Are you in for that?
100%. Esports, I think, is basically the FIFA game and whatever other stuff that they do. Right?
Yeah, not just that.
It's really important, I think, that the women's game be spun off from the men's game.
Yeah.
One of the big reasons, until very recently, when they sold their World Cup rights, it was like, okay, you buy the men's World Cup, and look, and you get, you know, the under-20 World Cup, you get the women's World Cup, you get all these what were considered to be dregs, but we found out they're not dregs. Women's World Cup, more than a billion viewers last time.
Yeah.
I think it was Men's World Cup, I think, had 4.5 billion. Let women's football grow on their own. You might need a different strategy for it. For me, a biennial World Cup in women's football is a no-brainer. international women's football works. It's great. It's a great way to develop the game.
I agree.
They should have specialist people selling women's football. A lot of sponsors who, you know, might not be able to afford to invest in men's football, but who are very keen on women's football, have a separate deal for them. Yeah. You know, now they'll be able to go and do that. They can activate some of their sponsorships. It'll be more tailored to women's football. It's just a different environment in the way you sell it, and there's no point cramming it into a one-size-fits-all package with men's football.
I agree. The game between Duisburg and Osnabrück in the German third division Gab was abandoned on Sunday after Osnabrück Aaron Opoku was racially abused. Gab, this was the correct response.
So it was a correct response.
It's quite really rare.
It was correct. It's rare. It was correct response in terms of how the protocol was applied, how the referee applied it. Essentially, this guy Opoku was racially abused by one guy in the stands. He was upset. His team said, "We don't want to continue." The referee said, "Okay, fine, let's go." The other team, Duisburg, the supported home team, supported them. But what was really nice, what I thought was really encouraging, is both sets of fans, both sets of ultras, went out. They identified the guy who had been racially abusing him. He was removed. He's going to be prosecuted, presumably.
Yeah.
And they spent the rest of the time afterwards chanting, Nazis out.
Yeah.
Because the guy was apparently from far right dude. This is the right response. Well done, Osnabrück. Well done, Duisburg. Well done to their fans and well done to the referees in this situation. Dan Ashworth, currently at Brighton and formerly at the FA, is apparently the favorite to get the technical director job at Newcastle.
That's right.
Good choice, Jules?
I think good choice for Newcastle. He's highly rated, highly thought of in the industry. We know him quite well. I like a lot of the signings that he made at Brighton, of course, like Sima and Cucurella and Mwepu and people like that. Mitoma, who's on loan at Saint-Gilloise. I think as that, he has worked with small budget, though. This is a different league, if you believe that the Saudis are going to invest massively in. So let's see how he does there. I think for him, it's a step up. You would think that's why he's taking the job. Certainly more money. But it's also a very tricky one, because even if you have a lot of money, you have to get them right. And the players that you sign get resolved and deliver for your team. So probably more pressure than at Brighton.
No question, more pressure than at Brighton. Hasn't been approved yet. Previously, of course, he was at the FA, where obviously they weren't buying any players, but they spent a lot of time looking at them. I think that's his strength, is looking at players, player evaluation, and so on. The one thing I got to always laugh about is, do you remember who the under-21 coach was?
Yeah.
When he was at the FA? A.D. Boothright.
Yeah.
This is the part for me, this is like the missing link that I never understand. Ashworth, who we all agree is brilliant and so on, continued to employ A.D. Boothright for so long. That was the one thing that's weird.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a good explanation.
Yeah, they're best friends. That's why. Because otherwise, it's not on
it doesn't reflect well.
It's not on how competent. Okay.
Either way, it doesn't reflect well on him, yeah?
Crazy.
But he is.
Don't get me started on that. Okay. But for the rest, I maintain what I said. Roma ahead to a 1-1 draw at home by Sampdoria, and Tammy Abraham gets injured as well. Gab, that means Grumpy Jose.
Grumpy Jose, just after they got the win over Atalanta. Yeah. And then, he comes out and they're pegged back by Sampdoria. Look, the thing is,
we're late in the game.
Roma at home against Sampdoria is not a good matchup, because you know what Sampdoria are going to do. They're going to sit back, they're going to clog the area and so on. But you had the lead and you need to see it out when that happens. So a bit disappointing. We'll see about Tammy Abraham's injury. Obviously, it is a big loss.
Yeah, big loss.
Marseille are second in Ligue 1 with a game in hand after drawing 1-1 at home to Rams. Jules, plenty of controversy in this one. If you haven't, go to YouTube. It's worth seeing what happened at the end of this,
It was never a penalty that Dimitri Payet got in the 98th minute. I think it was 95 or 96 maybe when he got the pen. 98 when he scored it. Younous Abdelhamid, the Reims defender, said, "We got robbed here. We really got robbed here." And I think
the guy got sent off at the end.
It was. You feel for Reims and Garcia, Oscar Garcia, because they played well. They had a good game plan in. They scored with Hugo Ekitike, the young, very, very promising striker. And then when they thought it's a famous win for them, and to even a draw, to draw that way is very, very frustrating. You could sense the frustration big time.
Just let me ask you about Ligue 1, because we're talking about how Paris Saint-Germain are kind of, going through the motions because they have a big lead. if Marseille win their game in hand, Paris Saint-Germain's lead will be reduced to, I think, 49 points. No, just kidding.
Yeah, right, nobody's challenging. But Ander Herrera came on French television last night and he said, again, which he said before, but Ligue 1 deserves more respect because it's a tough league. He said, look at Sevilla. They're second in La Liga, could potentially push Real Madrid for the title. Were beaten by Lille and got a draw, so got 1 point out of six against Lille. Real Sociedad, who've been doing well in La Liga, got beaten by Monaco. So his point was like, you know, PSG drew at Lorient, it's a tough place to go, which I don't agree, I said to you before. But I certainly think the league is getting better, which is good. Then it will never be as good as the Premier League or even the other three. But I think there's progress made, which is really good. I think it's really good. A lot of focus in Italy on Juventus over forced accounting and player trading. Remember, we mentioned that a lot. But police also raided Inter and Milan, Gab. What did they find, if anything?
Well, as far as Milan is concerned, they found absolutely nothing. They found like, oh, look, right. Everything is fine here. You haven't engaged in anything dubious.
Dodgy thing.
In Inter, they're still examining certain cases. Now, especially certain transfers with the striker Pinamonti, where they put in a buyback clause, and this is purely accounting
stuff.
This
is amazing.
So essentially, I think in Pinamonti's case, they sell him to Genoa for 19 million.
Yeah.
But they have a buyback clause for 21 million. And then, so they sell him for 19 million, and they immediately buy him back for 21 million.
Oh my God.
So you can book the 19 million.
But surely that's not allowed. Surely.
Why not? Why not? And then you amortize the 21 million over the life of his contract, and oh look, we've made 15 million. It's stuff that, you know, again, spirit of the law, letter of the law. They had to do it to squeeze in under the financial fair play. I don't think whether for them or for Juve, because there's lawyers involved, and it's the letter of the law that they followed. I think they're going to be okay there. What could get them in trouble in Juve's case, as we've said before, is some of those wiretaps. Is there actual collusion to do this? Is there actual false reporting or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Inquiries ongoing. Staying in my magical hometown of Milan, the land of everything, as I like to call it.
Of course.
Plans for the new San Siro were unveiled. Jules, do you like it?
I do a lot, Gab. The cathedral. I love a new stadium. You're not too keen. I love a new stadium. I love going in. It always smells nice and everything. The slight issue I have, and you disagree with me completely, is I would have like two different stadiums. Don't give me the like, let's save the planet. I would have like a stadium for Milan with the Milan spirit, with the Milan heritage, legacy, photos of all the great former players everywhere, paintings, colors, red and black everywhere. And one for Inter, with the same thing for Inter. You share a stadium, you don't have your touch in it because you share it,
so,
right? Or what, you repaint it every time the home team comes up?
So a couple of things here.
Yeah.
So first of all, the San Siro, currently its official name is the Stadio Giuseppe Meazza, named for the legendary Peppino Meazza, who of course played for both teams.
Yes, okay, that's good.
But beyond that, and it's not that I don't like new stadiums. I don't like new stadiums. I don't get excited by looking at pictures. I get excited once I go there. I'll give you an example of a stadium which some people don't like, but I think is absolutely fantastic. I really like the Emirates. I really liked it. After they built it, I liked it. I thought the sight lines were great. I thought
me too.
Everything looked really, really good. Obviously, you get more attached to a familiar stadium, and San Siro will always be iconic. I also understand why they have to build a new one, because they have to generate revenue. There's still more red tape. Hopefully, they'll have the impetus to go and get through this. In terms of a shared stadium, Jules, I know it might be difficult because, of course, you grew up supporting a club that dates all the way back to 1970. But stadiums are just objects. This is just the
material
world.
But Manchester have two stadiums. Well, what do you mean?
You can have 50 stadiums for all I care. The reality is, in Milan, we wear our faith of who we support on the inside. It is a state of mind.
Well, are Roma and Lazio not discussing two different stadiums? Like, is Roma and Lazio not like, let's all have our own one?
Don't get me started on
those. No.
They are.
So, okay.
And for different reasons.
So it's not just
Rome. That's Rome. I'm not from Rome.
I know. But I love San Siro. But San Siro is a great stadium, but is a colorless stadium, right? Because you can't have. Do you see my point about colors, heritage, spirit.
Yeah, if you share, you can't have any of that, right? I'm not 2 years old. I don't need to see colors to get excited, right? We have a museum.
But it does.
We'll have a football museum on the history of Milan. That's there. That is the meaning of it. We disagree.
So every Milan fan sits on a seat where an Inter fan sits, right?
Yeah,
so your arch enemies sits there in the same place as you.
But I think you're kind of missing.
It's a good debate, I think, to have.
It is a good debate. I think it's also you're missing the nature of the fandom. You know how people say that in Liverpool, like, and obviously I know they have different stadiums, different histories, but how like families are split down the middle between Liverpool and Everton, right?
Yeah.
Whereas you look at great rivalries, for example, in Barcelona, I really don't imagine.
Yeah, I agree.
Barcelona fans and Espanyol fans, those are generally, you have entire families supporting one of them. Don't get me started on Glasgow. I think you'll find very few families where you've got, you
both,
know, two brothers and one is a Rangers fan and one is a Celtic fan. But in Milan, I think it's different. I mean, this is something that is lived. The rivalry is lived continuously. It's lived on the trams, which is one of the Milanese icons, of course. It's lived on the streets. It's lived within families. That's where it continues. And it's something you carry inside of you. So I have absolutely
no problem with that.
Before I get into the environmental aspects.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go. We don't need to go and build more crap.
Build a sustainable stadium.
It's going to be a sustainable stadium.
Buy two, then build two then.
Build two together. That's what you need.
Lazio win 3-1 away at Verona and Francesco Ascabi scores. But it's not well between Acerbi and the fans, Gab. It goes back to a few weeks ago. I think we mentioned it back then already.
Yeah, so, look, it's going to be really difficult for people who don't understand ultras culture to understand any of this. And even if you understand it, it might seem unfair to you. But basically, the Lazio ultras, you know, they're very passionate about it. They're unhappy about it. They show up at the training ground. They demand to speak to the players. Demand to speak to the team. Put pressure on them in a way that's unimaginable. Remember when those four guys went and sat outside Carrington and everybody flipped out and like, oh, the police came and they're just it's four idiots holding, I mean, not four idiots, four mopes holding signs. You know, in Italy, the team belongs to the fans.
Yeah, they fought their way.
This idea of ownership doesn't exist. They said the guy who owns the club is simply the guy who looks after the club on behalf of the fans. Yeah. The club is the fans and the colors. It's nothing else. Everything else, players come and go. So Acerbi got annoyed that they were critical of the team. And after he scored a while back, he went and he put his finger up to his lips as if to silence the curva. They did not like that. What they liked even less was that he apologized for it on Instagram afterwards. He said it was a genuine apology. And they wrote this long thing explaining their reasons. And they said, listen, in our history, we are Lazio. We have criticized really harshly some of the biggest legends of this club. Yeah. And they mentioned Giorgio Chinaglia. They mentioned Alessandro Nesta. They mentioned Siniša Mihajlović, you know, who are three icons.
Yeah, yeah.
Did not mention Paolo Di Canio, funny enough, because I think
he's one of them.
But if you want to be here, you have to take the criticism from the fans. And we don't accept your apology. And as far as we're concerned, you can leave. And I'm torn about it because Chadby's a really nice guy. He's being a really good defender. He's been involved in a lot of things socially and charity work and whatever. We'll see where this goes. But they said that they're not going to cheer for him ever again. They're going to boo him every time he touches the ball. And they just want him to leave.
They're not the fans you want against you, that's for sure.
No, definitely, not at all.
Definitely.
No more laughing at Unai Emery, Jules, at the start of the month. Yeah, you laugh.
I know it was coming.
It looked like he could be sacked. Then there was that weird story about him going to Newcastle.
No.
But now it's 5 wins in a row, including the one away to Atalanta, which was huge. You saw them advance the knockout rounds of the Champions League. I guess it's a good evening then.
It is. Good evening. I mean, two words as well. To explain all of this is Gerard Moreno. I'm sorry, but if you're not familiar with Villarreal, you haven't watched them, I can tell you that since his return, and he was in there for the Atalanta game, so it's not just him, I know, but the transformation of that team, even in terms of confidence, Gab, I saw them on Tuesday night where he's got another great goal. It was just like, you know, he's such a big part or the key part in everything they do that when he's there and not, it makes such a big difference. And that also explains why, after being really average for pretty much since August to the end of November. Now they're flying because they need they missed him so badly.
Why he was in the top 10 of the exactly his well, position we put him in the UFC 100?
Too right. Salernitana did not travel to face Udinese this midweek due to COVID, Gab. But the way things are going, it doesn't look like they'll be traveling anywhere until next season because
the league's saying again, if we don't get a buyer by the 31st of December, then you're out. You won't be fulfilling the rest of the fixtures. It'll be just as if they'd never happened. It has an impact on the table because obviously those teams that drop points against Salernitana, all those points will be wiped out.
Yeah.
And the reason this is all about is because there's a man, speaking of Lazio, named Claudio Lotito, yeah, who thinks that he can do what he wants. He owns Salernitana. They got promoted. They told him sell the club. He put all sorts of lawsuits and injunctions against it. Then they went into these trustees who were supposed to sell the club. Club hasn't been sold. You can't own two clubs in the same tournament.
It is a crazy story, though. It really annoys me.
So I'll tell you what, though. There was a banner from the Salernitana fans at their last home game before this one. And they said, we are about Salernitana. We're not about being in Serie A. We're not about Lotito. We're going to love our team.
No, I know.
We can restart from the amateur leagues. We are going to be here. And this is the attitude people have to come. I hate it when people are like, oh, it's about trophies. It's about winning. It's not about that.
No. But
it's about your team, your city, and the people you identify with. Salernitana fans understand this.
Yeah. And they
understand, I think, much more than Lotito does or others who try to be clever and whatever. I don't know if this team gets sold or not. I know they're probably going to get relegated. Relegated, rightly so.
Yeah.
And then who knows what's going to happen to them? But they have the fans are the right kind of fans, and they're taking this in the right spirit. What matters is the club.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just can't.
No, it's good. It's good. Yeah.
Jules, let's check in on our buddy Peter Boss at Lyon, winless since November.
I think he's Pierre now. He's not even Peter. No wins since November. He said a horrendous month of December. They drew against Metz. I mean, come on, against Metz. And to be fair, they were even lucky to draw. The 13th in the table. I do not see how Peter Bosch can survive here. I think the club is imploding from within anyway. Juninho is leaving now. Well, he wanted to leave at the end of the season. They said to him, hey, get out now. Olas is 72 and really, really doing his head. From one of the greatest owners in French football history and president, it's not good. They've had a crowd trouble in their cup game against Paris FC where their hooligans had the game abandoned at halftime. It's such a crazy time for them. And Peter Bosch is just not helping. It's not working. He's trying different tactics. It's not working.
How's the women's team doing?
How's the what?
The women's team at Lyon.
They're good. They're in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They're doing certainly much better than the boys.
Why don't they get whoever runs that team to run the men's team?
Yeah.
I don't mean to coach necessarily, but go and put some order and enough of this nonsense. And
I don't know, but it's too many mistakes made in the last, I don't know how many months. That is where they are now. And not just Peter Bosch, but I think Pierre has to go. Nice official, Gav, and it's sad. Catania, in Italy's third division, Serie C, have gone bust. Crazy to think that just 10 years ago, they were competing for a place in Europe under the leadership of a son, Diego Simeone.
It is remarkable.
It's sad. It's really sad.
It's a sad time for Simeone, actually, between what's happening at Atleti and what's happening at his old club. But, yeah, they were there. They had all those Argentine players. They had Papu Gomez.
Yeah.
They actually played much more attacking football than Diego Simeone would go on to play at Atletico Madrid. It's always sad when a team goes out. Catania is a big city. It's a major city. It's a blow to, I think, all of Sicilian football because obviously Palermo's struggling as well. Messina not at the races either.
And it's two Italian clubs now, Chievo and Chievo.
And Catania can add Salernitana to the list as well.
But it's bad.
But Catania's a big city. Catania's a real club. It's not Chievo.
No, I know, but still.
So it is sad, but you know what? If the fans are there, if the spirit is there, they will reform and they will come back. And I think that's what people need to understand. It's not just about money.
Yeah, for sure.
Fiorentina draw away to Verona 1-1, and neither Dusan Vlahovic nor Gio Simeone score. But Jules, let's remind everyone that Vlahovic has equaled the record for most Serie A goals in a calendar year, a record that belonged to some guy named Cristiano Ronaldo. I'm not sure what happened to him. And also, please tell me, and all the Viola fans out there, whether they should be excited about Jonathan Ikone arriving from Lille.
Yeah, of course. Let's start with Vlahovic. I really want him to beat the record. I know equaling is already good, and your name will be always next to Cristiano's one for that record. But I really want him to go and get 34. If we stay on 33, the Cristiano fans will say, hey, Cristiano scored 33 in 29 games. Vlahovic had done it in 43 games, so okay, I get that. But it's still an incredible amount of goals scored.
Yeah, and also you don't need to compare yourself to Cristiano Ronaldo. Right. That's really setting the bar kind of high. There's only one person who's in that conversation among active players, and his name is Lionel. Yeah.
And for Ikone, I think you should be very excited, not just because he's a very talented left-footed attacking midfielder or forward, if you want, who can play, especially on the right-hand side, to come inside on his left. I think he's getting a lot of maturity experience playing in the Champions League for the first 6 months of the season with Lille, with the national team as well. Winning the league title with Lille was a big thing for him. And I think he felt ready to go abroad in a big challenge for him in a different country. So good luck to him. I think for €15 million, it's a bargain. Well done, Fiorentina.
His contract was expiring, obviously.
Yeah, but he was worth a lot more before. For Lille, it's still good money. So I think everybody would be happy with that.
And then he gets sad again when you remind them Vlahovic is probably leaving, because you think of Nico Gonzalez, Dusan Vlahovic.
Oh my God, imagine.
Jonathan Ikone frontline.
Saponara and Ola.
Champions League quality. Castrovilli.
That would have been great. But listen, maybe Vlahovic will stick around for a little bit and they can, you know. Yeah,
maybe he's a little child. His dream was always to play with Jonathan Ikone.
Exactly. Maita Molango, the head of the PFA, the players, the English Players Union Syndicate, said that it's time for a serious discussion, Gab. We need to talk about fixture congestion, players' workloads, and all of that. What does he want? What he wants? A World Cup every 2 years?
Yeah, exactly. So the time is now for a serious discussion. I would have thought it's been the time for a while.
Yeah.
Look, you know my thoughts on this. The reality is there's players. He represents the players' union, which is all the players, right? Not just the Premier League ones. We have a situation where people further down the food chain want to play more because clubs make their money from gate receipts, and we have a situation at the top of the food chain where clubs want to. Well, I don't know if the clubs want to play less, but the players certainly would rather not go and do nonsense like the League Cup and so on. So how do you find that balance? I've been an advocate for a long time. Get rid of midweek league football. Go down to 18 teams, or even I would go down to 16 teams. Get rid of the League
16
Cup.
Is 16 is punchy.
16 teams, you would have more meaningful games, right?
I know.
In the top flight. And then look, beyond that, if I'm a team that's not involved in European competition, if I'm Brighton and I want to go and organize my own invitational competition to fill more seats in random midweeks, hey, I can go ahead and do that. Maybe I'll go and I'll play with Union Saint-Gilloise, who are owned by the same people, by the way.
It's helpful.
Whatever. It doesn't make any sense that people are like, you know, if we want to increase revenue, there are other ways to do it rather than just simply playing more and more games if you're at the top flight. Make the games more meaningful. With 18 teams, with 16 teams, you would have serious relegation battles or battles for Europe until the end of the season. You wouldn't have this big lump of eight teams.
But there's a reason why this hasn't happened before, right? Because there's blockage from a lot of different places.
Yeah.
So what makes you think that it will happen now? Less games, a better schedule. I know the schedule will have to be restructured in 2024.
Do you want to know the answer? I think because there has been a change of leadership in players' unions. And this is my hope, right?
You know what? We should get Maheta on the show.
Maheta, if you're watching, please come on the show, right?
He speaks
Italian, too, I'm told.
Gavin Jules meets perfect.
Maheta Molango, why not? No, but we've had a change at FIFPro, right? Yeah. After many, many years, your friend Philippe Piat and the said Secretary General Theo van Segelen, who served admirably for many years, but now they're gone. You've got new blood in Jonas Beer Hoffman, who we've had as a guest on before, and Aganso, who's now in charge of FIFPro. Here in the PFA, Maheta Molango coming in after a bazillion years of Gordon Taylor. You know, maybe now they realize that the impetus comes from the players. Yeah. If the players say, no, we don't want a 20-team top flight. We don't want to play in the League Cup. We want to find other solutions for this. Then you can do that.
Yeah.
Because, it is the... It's got to come from the top because those are the players. It's at City of Liverpool who are playing 50, 60 games a season. It's those guys. It's not the people like Kidderminster Harriers or whatever nonsense is further down the table. Charlie Musonda is a Chelsea midfielder who's been out on loan most of his career, but he's been seriously hampered by injuries, and now he's offering to play for free, Jules.
I know, Gab. It's a sad story in a way for a very, very talented kid who moved to Chelsea when he was really young. I think could have gone to a lot of different clubs because he was that good.
His father was a tremendous footballer,
of course,
too.
Very good, left-footed, very talented, elegant, everything you want. He's 25 now. hardly played ever for Chelsea. Went on loan to Betis, Celtic, Vitesse. Well, I think he played his last game, you know, at professional level 2 years ago, something. Plenty of injuries. And now he's saying, listen, I don't want to go on loan again. I've got 1 year left on my contract. I want to play for free.
Yeah.
So let's see.
To prove his fitness.
Yeah, to prove his fitness and his talent. I think he's very brave to do that, to be fair.
He deserves better.
Yeah. Atalanta have an annual tradition, Gab, of playing the last game before Christmas in a limited edition shirt that then they sell and get auctioned for charity. But something went wrong this year. What happened?
Yeah, I feel for Atalanta because between the Villarreal game and this and some of the recent results, not a great run.
Yeah.
So basically, they do this limited edition shirt, and it was supposed to have the Bergamo skyline, you know, with the church and Bergamo Alta. Mm. So they commissioned a company to do this, and they come back, and there's a skyline on it. It's not Bergamo, though. It's Turin. It's a different city.
You're kidding.
I know.
How?
I don't know. The Muppet Show, I guess. I mean, the good news is they're still going to auction it off for charity and stuff, and it still goes to a good cause. But
who's going to buy an Atalanta shirt with a Turin?
Because it's still for charity, but I am so tempted to name and shame this company for what they did.
Man.
I won't do it because nobody cares, and unless you're going to go and order a bunch of custom-made shirts. Like our custom-made
look at this
quality hoodies. How about that?
Yes.
Big thanks to Santa. Jules, I'm going to be back on the 27th with Nedim Onua. How about that?
Yep.
You'll be away, but then you'll come back.
Of course.
Hopefully all our viewers will return as well. Happy holidays, whatever you celebrate. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.